Academia has all but surrendered to political correctness these days, and the greatest victim is truth. Right now, we're going to talk with Dr. Robert Oscar Lopez, who's a professor at one of the California State Colleges. He's also a co-author of a book called Jephthah's Daughters, Innocent Casualties in the War for Family Equality. And the book basically is a case study of 70 such cases of children who grew up in same-sex households and found something lacking. Such was the case of Professor Robert Oscar Lopez. Now, because of this politically incorrect stance, he's in trouble as far as academic freedom is concerned. Professor Lopez, it's great to have you back on the program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
Sure. And why don't you, for those who are not familiar with the book, Jephthah's Daughters, summarize the thesis, and then we'll get into the issue of academic freedom.
Well, the book looked at the impact of this movement for family equality, in quotes, on many different groups. We have a section on children, a section on women, a section on the third world, a section on society's legal institutions, a section on free speech, and a section on the gay community itself. So we looked at how this radical, rapid shift in marriage really did destabilize and it harmed a lot of people. So that's what the premise of the book was. We published that in February 2015, and it has gotten me in quite a bit of trouble, but it looks like the current controversy at Cal State Northridge, where I teach, and I don't speak on behalf of Cal State Northridge, I have to say that, of course, but the current controversy actually combines outrage over the book with outrage from much earlier with my activism in the field of children's rights.
And you, I understand, you and others filed an amicus brief in the Supreme Court decision related to same-sex marriage. Unfortunately, that went down in flames. But the idea was, hey, listen to the children who actually have grown up in these kind of households. Would it be fair to say, Professor Lopez, that the majority of children who grow up in such households are not happy that they grew up in same-sex households?
I don't know whether I can say majority. I know that there are many. I have many examples of it. I think it's very difficult to reduce it to statistics, so it's hard to say whether it's a majority or a minority. So,
okay. Well, what about a comment or two? I mean, even in your own case.
Yeah, I think that what we find consistently across the board, even among people who talk about how they love their parents and who speak in defense of gay parenting, in all of the cases, there are challenges that are placed on the child because you've lost connection to one of your biological parents by default. There is somebody who's in your life and playing the role of a parent who isn't a parent, and very often you reject the notion that this person is your parent. Namely, it's most often someone who's sleeping with your biological parent, so it's a step-parent figure at best. But it's different from other step-parent adoptions because there's also the fact that the presence of this person in your parents' life and in your life eliminates the possibility of you having either a father or a mother. So there's a larger cultural loss that you experience as a result of this. And that goes across the board. People struggle with that. Even if they're doing okay in school, even if they're quote-unquote well-adjusted, there still is a loss and a feeling of alienation that I pick up in almost every single case that I've looked into of people who are raised in these homes. There's a sense that something was taken from them, and there's also a fear of being able to vocalize these things in this politically correct climate. There's this fear that you can't really speak about your own pain, because if you speak about your own pain, you're implicitly rejecting the politics of your parents. So I think that it really infringes upon their free expression.
And you have told me in a previous discussion that there was love in your household. Your lesbian mom and her lover, they loved each other, they loved you, but despite that, you were still missing a dad, and that hurt.
Yes, that's basically, you just said it perfectly. Yeah.
Okay, so now let's talk about academic freedom. What's going on? Are you in trouble because you've articulated some of these things out in the public?
Yes. I mean, what happened is this. Okay, there was a movement going back to at least 2012 from a bunch of gay activists at groups like GLAAD and the Human Rights Campaign to try to marginalize me in the academic discipline to the point of trying to basically hound me out of the job and to make me basically someone who's so poisonous that nobody will give me a platform. That was their explicit goal. And they worked on this in many ways. And their most recent attack on me comes through a very dishonest means, which I think will backfire on them. Because what they've done is they have gotten someone, you know, I don't know exactly how these students came up with this idea, but there were a group of students on my campus who brought me up on charges of anti-gay discrimination because I gave them an option. It was not required, but they could replace one class assignment with voluntary attendance at this conference at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. And there were some students who came back and claimed that the conference was anti-gay and that there were all these anti-gay comments made at the conference. Now, this investigation into that complaint really lasted for over a year. Mm. Most of the time, I did not know that they were investigating me. They only let me know about it about 8 months after the investigation began.
Wow.
And then I was never really given the charges. I was never given a copy of the complaint. I didn't know what I was defending myself against. And many of the witnesses and claims, I never had a chance to respond to. What the university finally determined on October 16th, after over a year of investigation, was that I was not guilty of discrimination, but I had retaliated against the students because of the way that I reacted to their false accusations. So they tried everything they could to get me on discrimination, even though it was a ridiculous charge, because I had the video so I could prove that the anti-gay comments weren't made. I had the syllabus so I could prove that they didn't have to go to the conference. You know, so everything was, all of their charges were groundless. But what they've done with this, the way that they're interpreting Title IX, is they say that if they accuse you of things, even if it's false, even if it's aggressive, even if they, in class, accuse you of false things, if you respond in a way that delegitimizes the way that they feel, that is taken as retaliation. Do you understand? So it's a circular witch trial kind of thing. You know, you can't get out of it once you're charged. There's no way to defend yourself.
You have been guilty then of offending somebody.
Exactly. Guilty. It's really a thought crime. It's because, you know, I didn't even deliver a presentation at this conference. I was not one of the speakers. Never in the classroom did I bring up gay adoption as an issue that entire semester. But the students knew of me because of these off-campus groups flooding the campus with all of these negative pamphlets about me. And somebody, I think, I'm pretty sure that somebody coached some of these students to file this complaint. And so basically I'm being found guilty of something I didn't do, when the real issue is they're trying to punish me for thinking in a way that they don't like. It's very scary. I have gotten a lot of support, believe it or not, from liberals on this, because I think the precedent that this would set for academic freedom is so chilling to everybody involved that's watching this.
Yeah, it's like some of our schools are becoming totalitarian. I mean, you can see that in some of the protests going on.
Yeah, no, these protests, I think that people need to be crystal clear in their mind. These are not snowflakes. These are not vulnerable kids. These aren't kids who are too fragile or have been pampered. These are well-organized fascist groups of students that are taking over campus by campus. And if you look at the demands that they're placing when they protest and take over buildings and harass people, they usually, A, want people to get fired. Have you noticed that? And then, B, they typically want there to be more money allocated to the diversity office and more investigators and stricter speech codes and more penalties for people who violate the speech code. So, in a sense, this groundswell of protest on all these campuses is culminating in the creation of this shadow police state that exists on campuses that will eventually be able to do what these students did to me. They're going to be able to take out any dissenter, anybody who remotely questions them, anyone who looks at them the wrong way is going to be brought up on charges. And if they can't substantiate the charges, they will make it up. And then you can't defend yourself, because any way that you could possibly defend yourself, you're either breaking confidentiality or you're retaliating. You see, so it's really, really scary. I think people need to take this seriously. And I think people in Congress have got to take this up when they look at the funding eligibility for colleges. I mean, they've got to take control of this issue, because, you know, we can't just let all colleges fall under this, what Alan Dershowitz calls the fog of fascism.
Wow. And Alan Dershowitz is very liberal, but he recognizes what's going on.
Yeah, I think a lot of liberal professors are doing a double take right now, and they are very worried, because because for decades they were very successful at driving out all of the conservative professors. So one of the effects of that is pretty much this is their problem. These children are their creations. You know, they can't blame the Republicans for this. This is completely the liberal academy, and it's now consuming its own. You know, the students are striking out against the very people who set up this liberal system at the universities. It's like the mobs in Paris beheading.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. It was the French Revolution, where the revolutionaries were, after a while, consuming their own.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening now. Now, don't sleep on this, though, because even while all this is going on, they are still on a very concerted purge to remove the few conservative professors who remain in the university. Right now, not only is this purge against me going on, Carol Swain at Vanderbilt University is also being possibly driven out of her job by a student petition because of her opposition to gay marriage. John McAdams at Marquette University has already been unofficially fired, but they're just waiting on the last formalities. He was a tenured professor who taught at that college for decades, and he has been driven out of his job. We're all tenured. So it's not even like tenure is protecting the few conservative professors who are left. But I think that what they're trying to do is they're using each of the few conservative professors that remain as lightning rods. You know, they're trying to take it to squeeze as much, I don't know, traction out of us as they possibly can before we're finally just driven off the reservation.
Wow. And you teach literature, I understand, right?
Yeah. And yeah, you know, the conference in question, I was teaching about family and mothers and fathers and children in literature. And believe it or not, and so what the assignment the students could choose to do was to create an exhibit on, say, the Scarlet Letter, or if they were in the Greek and Roman mythology class, they could talk about Oedipus Rex. I mean, these are timeless, timeless themes. And there was somebody in the administration at Northridge who was once a dean of humanities who had the audacity to say that family and childhood are not major themes in literature, and so therefore this was not a legitimate academic event. And I can't believe that somebody who comes from the humanities could be that ignorant about their own field, you know, or that they would say that the humanities have nothing to say to the debate on, let's say, gay adoption. Of course you should read literature. Of course you should learn about history. I mean, why would we eliminate those disciplines from our core study? But that's kind of what the people on the left are doing now. It used to be that conservatives were the ones who were always saying, don't study history, you know, instead everyone should major in electrical engineering. You know what I mean? But now the liberals are saying, don't study history, don't read the literature, because all of that is sexist and racist and homophobic and Islamophobic and anti-Semitic. And, you know, so basically they want all knowledge to be based in maybe the last couple of years of scientific research. And that is chilling. And that is definitely not what the founding fathers imagined when they drafted the First Amendment and when they put that clause in Article 1 about Congress supporting the arts and letters. And that's not what they had in mind.
You're absolutely right. And that's not what Elihu Yale, the Puritan who helped fund the school that you earned your undergraduate degree from, Yale, and, you know, he did not have that in mind, nor did the Reverend John Harvard, who gave a lot of money that ended up becoming the school Harvard, or the Princeton, which was founded by Presbyterian elders. I mean, this is awful what has happened in academia. Formerly Christian, now it's a big wasteland.
Yeah, it has. I think wasteland is the perfect, perfect description of it, because you see on campus after campus these protests. And you try to cut through the slogans and the hashtags, and you just want to ask them, what are you asking for? And there's nothing there. I mean, you know, at Harvard right now, they're all up in arms because there was black tape on some portraits of black professors. I don't even know whether that was a hoax or not. I have my doubts about it. But, you know, you're at Harvard. You're going to get a degree from Harvard. You have all of your life ahead of you. Why are you going to devote all of your attention to reacting to 17 pieces of black tape? It doesn't make any sense. You know, and I did go to Yale. I was one of those sort of alienated, struggling minority kids who went from a public high school and then found themselves kind of like a fish out of water at Yale. But you get through it, and the things that they're complaining about are not really impactful. I mean, they were complaining about an email about Halloween costumes. That is nothing with the Black community or with the Latino community, or how they're going to overcome their economic challenges and how they're going to be able to participate more in elections and in political life. None of that is really affected by an email about Halloween costumes. So I think the colleges are a wasteland. I don't know what I feel like I'm doing my best to teach them the classics. I teach them Homer and Virgil, and I teach them, Henry David Thoreau and Nathaniel Hawthorne. I do my best to ground them in the great classics that created the world that I feel they inherited from them. But, I'm a dying voice, and I don't think I'm going to be able to laugh.
All right, we're basically out of time. Do you have a website you want to refer people to? Again, we've been talking with Robert Oscar Lopez, professor, college professor, and the co-compiler of a book called Jephthah's Daughters. But how about a website? And we'll close with that.
If you'd like, there's a website called English Manif, and the way that you can write it in your URL field is englishmanif.blogspot.com. So it's like Englishman with the word if, I as in I, and then F as in Frank, all one word, .blogspot.com.
English man, M-A-N?
Yeah, if.
Well, that sounds sexist. No, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. Thank you, Dr. Lopez. Good to talk with you. All the best
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.